following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Hi there. Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Tax Mass Show with Nathan Ross. And I believe Dan DuBose will be joining me here shortly. And as usual, we're going to talk about helping you achieve your financial freedom of sorts throughout your retirement years. And that's becoming increasingly difficult. I've been gathering all sorts of materials trying to get a handle on exactly how much the metrics may be changing right in front of our eyes with inflation, with wars going on around the world, poor leadership likewise going on around the world for sure here in our country. And I tell you what, it's not a situation where you can have much confidence watching what's going on in Washington right now, much less the other side of the world, I guess Eastern Europe primarily. And I don't know, but what we're going to be seeing similar things the Asian quadrants. You know, it looks like China is continuing to flex their muscles and beat their chest and sending some of their warplanes into Taiwan airspace on a daily basis. So I tell you, these are times that regardless of where you're at with your retirement, it's probably not enough. And I'm going to suggest you really have to look at the assorted risks. The two that you can try to do something about are the ones we focus on, which is the longevity risk. In other words, will your money outlive you, or are you going to outlive your money? Which obviously the latter is a bad situation. And then the other one, and this is for everybody, not just people that are looking to retire, is the tax rate risk. And it's so bad at this point, even the Democrats, Joe Manchin being the key, is balking at significant additional spending, although you might differ with what that is defined as. But suffice it to say that even a Democrat is the reason the Democrats can't get past a vote on raising our taxes, which I agree with Senator Manchin. You know, if we're going to raise our taxes, let's at least use the extra tax to pay down the deficit. Let's not necessarily run out and put it into all the assorted programs that have been delineated. And of course, the administration is riding the climate change argument pretty hard. But the problem is that's not really the totality of what's in their increased spending. There's significant other social planning and quote research. And you know, if you go back and look at how some of the, I've seen several reports here recently about how the last January a year ago, the $1.9 trillion stimulus got spent. And of course, it's everybody's friends are involved in terms of programs and research that has nothing at all to do with cutting our deficit. It's how do we spend what we have times three or times four. In any event, before we go to the first break, let me just finish our disclaimer that just because you listen to this show, especially today, because we're going to get back into Roth conversions, it's something I continue to get questions after every week when we mention it, and we're going to try to explain you know, how that can impact both your plan A or your plan B as you head into retirement. I hope you've got at least those two, maybe others. But in any event, we'll be right back. Hopefully Dan will have joined us by then, and we will pick up when we get back here in a few minutes.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of our Be a Planner Tax Mass show today. And boy, that song is especially true right now. And in life, the cost of life is rising and rising quick. 9.1% was the inflation measure that was just announced. I believe it was this past week. I've heard it so many times, it seemed like it's been a month ago. Of course, it's the same story over and over for the last year or more. And of course, the wholesale inflation measures, I forget all that they're referred to or called, but they're up mightily as well, which means our 9.1% inflation measure will probably be higher next month. But in any event, this isn't the first time it's happened, and, you know, the sun will come up tomorrow. I have no doubt about that, but I tell you what, if you're in a retirement mode now and you need cash flow now to live, you know, it's problematic, and depending on what your assets are, you may or may not be able to do better and generate more cash flow. But yeah, the reality is your nest egg has to create cash flow at some point in time. And if you're already into retirement, which again, retirement, the way I define retirement is you being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it. So, you know, you wake up tomorrow morning and you're not, your first priority is not getting on the road to get into the office. If there is an office and, you know, you're wanting to do whatever it is that makes you happy, and that's retirement. I got sidetracked there as we were heading into break. I was juggling multiple constituencies here behind the scenes, but in any event, yes, just because you listen to the show today, don't run out and try these strategies, as appealing as they may be, with your money until you've consulted with your own advisors that have a keen understanding of what your current facts and circumstances are and how or if these strategies might apply to you. But I can tell you right now, unless you plan on passing away over the next couple, 3 years, or you don't have any, I mean no retirement savings, so you're going to be one of the millions of Americans that are counting on Social Security for your retirement, which that's not what Social Security was originally created for, but it's unfortunate just how many Americans have come to a point where that's all they have. So let's hope Congress figures out how to address the significant deficit we're working on overall with regard to Social Security and Medicare, because it is in a mess currently, and you know, depending on which facet of the program you're focused on, there's pieces that run out of money as early as 2026, and then by 2032 or so, we've got, you know, huge problems. But more generally, we've got problems in general with just our ability to pay what the annual budget's supposed to cover now. And you know, just so you know, the the discretionary portion of the annual budget that we fight over amongst congressmen and congresswomen is a smidgen of the overall amount of tax collections in terms of how those tax dollars get allocated. And by the years 2029, 2030, there will not be enough tax collections to pay 100% of the debt service on our nation's debt. And that's when the rubber's going to meet the road, most likely. You wish it would meet it sooner in terms of addressing the significant deficit. And we'll mention again what the tax brackets need to go up to here momentarily. Dan, are you on the line now? Have you been able to join us?
Nathan, good afternoon.
There you are. Good to hear your voice. And in any event, you know, we were talking this week about the, quote, average American and how far behind most are on their retirement savings. But, you know, let's talk about those tax rates for a moment, because I guess on the one hand, tax rates don't matter if you don't have any taxable income or earned income, right? Or pension income or interest and dividends or real estate cash flows, which the cash flows themselves aren't taxable, thankfully. And that's definitely a plan A for most of our clients, is they're counting on their real estate investments to continue to generate cash flow. And I would suggest, and you may disagree, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts, is if you had your choice between investments that would kick off $100,000 to $150,000 a year, let's call it, which is a number that many of our clients have indicated is their minimum after tax living level, to where they don't decrease their lifestyles, they head into retirement. Or if you had the choice of maybe $3 million in the bank, would that be an easy choice, Dan, or do you look at that, each one of those, with significant risk on satisfying that $100,000 to $150,000, given what we know now? What's your choice?
There's certainly significant risk, you know, on either way. The, you know, $3 million would be a very nice nest egg these days. You could get your 4% out of that. That'd give you $120,000. But many people are saying that, you know, it's only being able to yield maybe 3% after tax these days. So maybe you need that $4 or $5 million to get to that $150,000 you're talking about after tax.
Well, that's where I was headed. Is whatever you think those two metrics are that I just mentioned, the cost is going up. And when you look at the cost over the next 30 years for sure, and likely even 5 to 10 years, they're significant. And that tax rate risk all of a sudden it adds to the longevity risk. It's like, you know, if you're taking money out at a faster pace, it's killing you on both risks, right? Your money is not going to outlive you. And so you know, we start looking at, well, what are the actions we can take today that are going to keep money? It's not just the cost. I mean, yeah, it's one thing to say the tax brackets will have to more than double, which they will, and we'll talk about that here in a second. But it's another when the ice cube is melting in terms of dropping or reducing the amount of money that cash flows could be earned on. And certain types of assets, that happens more readily than others. And you know, the area that we focus on, which is real estate private partnership syndications, is one that has some downside protection against that concept. In other words, the market is not going up and down, like a yo-yo, so that, you know, when you get money out of a real estate partnership, it's because there's excess cash sitting in the partnership's bank accounts that someone that's running the transaction who has some foresight into where the project is headed has determined that's excess, and they distribute that out. Not exactly how it works in the stock market, and the problem is if it's not, it may not even be the market. It may be an annuity of some sort where to tap your money earlier than what the annuity calls for, you're going to have significant surrender penalties and other divots into your cash flow. And I'll tell you, I would take my own case if I were, you know, able to choose. I would always take the cash flow over the significant balance. I'm not saying you don't need the significant balance if you're going to want to be self-insured as to all the unknowns in life. The problem is that number, as you just pointed out, Dan, has gone way up from what we used to think. And I started at 3 million, and then you were up to 4 to 5 million right away, rightfully so. And why? What's the single biggest issue that really we don't know if we've got the 4 or 5 or even the 3?
Are you thinking your partnership with the IRS?
I'm exactly, well, or the government in general, I guess you could say.
Yeah,
the IRS.
Government.
That's exactly what I'm thinking about. And don't think they don't realize they're a partner. I mean, you can just look at what's going on right now in the 401 space, where the Secure Act 2, and that's not the name of it, but that's the pseudonym, I guess, that's being used. Secure Act 1, or Secure Act, passed several years ago, and Secure Act 2 is kind of like, you know, there was some milk spilt on Secure Act 1, so now they're coming back to wipe that up, right? Thankfully, they're not reducing, not yet, some of the existing benefits that we utilize in the self-directed 401 trust space. And, you know, it's amazing to me, and, you know, I've been watching this for a while. You know, the 401k showed up, and it is remarkable history. If you were a big company, you couldn't write the script any better to suit your needs. And, you know, without going into all the history, let's just think back. In our lifetime, the retirement savings model has gone from where it was born almost entirely by the employer over to where now not much of it's born by the employer. You know, there may be a match in your company, but it's not anywhere near 100% or even 50%. I don't know what the average is, but I'm assuming it ranges from maybe 2% to 5 or 6%, Dan. I don't know if you've got any insights.
Yeah, 6% would be a very generous
rich one.
Match. Yeah,
yeah, that would be a rich one.
3%.
And, yeah, and so when you look at the costs that have been, you know, you can use whatever word you want. I'm going to use the word offloaded from the company's books and records and for future cash flows over to the individual worker. It's like, you know, were we all just asleep when we saw that happening? I mean, I don't think people understood. I mean, you can talk to anybody that participates, even today, and the likelihood that they understand the investment choices they have in their 401 is almost nil. And moreover, for them to understand even how it works in general. And I've heard more people say, well, you know, we had our annual meeting or semi-annual meeting to pick investment choices, and I just threw up my hands at some point and picked something, right? Because every 401's a little bit different, or a lot of bit different, as to what you can invest in. And we like to control our money, and therefore we eschew the big company 401, which was the one that showed up back in the late 70s, and then there were several variants early 80s. It was towards the later 80s, I believe, that the self-directed model, well, no, it was, I'm sorry, early 2000s before the self-directed model became feasible. But in any event, we're coming up on our second break. Let's pick up right there when we get back. And Dan, remind me the UBIT discussion, and we'll go into that. Anyway, we'll be right back here with more of the Be a Planner Tax Mash Show with Nathan Ross and Dan DuBose.
You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com or tune in each Saturday at 5 p.m. for the Be a Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross right here on AM 700 KSEV.
Okay, welcome back to the third segment of the Be a Planner Tax Mash Show with Nathan Ross and Dan DuBose. And we've been discussing the sad state of affairs when it comes to the traditional 401k plans that most big companies have, and the fact that most big companies have totally dodged the bullet, at least, you know, currently, for having to be prepared to, you know, find the resources to pay for their employees' retirement years. And you know, I should make it sound like it was all, you know, everything was great back when we had the true pension plans. Those would be your defined benefit plans. Dan, how would you compare and contrast defined benefit plans with 401s so people understand the significance?
Well, defined benefit means you're going to get a defined benefit. You know, when you decide to retire, you're going to have a 60-70% of your salary that you went out with, and that's guaranteed by your company, or nowadays sometimes it even goes over to the Pension Guarantee Corporation, you know, of the U.S. government, because so many companies couldn't afford it, went out of business, or just quit pensions altogether. Pensions are expensive. People just live too long these days. You know, they don't die at 65 anymore. They die at 85, 90 years old.
Well, and there's a lot more of them. It's like rabbits.
And there's a lot more of them.
But you know, you remember, I'm sure, and there, one of these, you mentioned the PBGC, Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, and before we start waxing eloquent about the good old days and having guarantees, we got about as much a guarantee as the FDIC gives us on our money in a bank. And lest you think that if all the banks went under, the FDIC is going to write all of his checks for whatever the limit is now. What is it, $125,000, Dan, in the bank?
I don't know. I don't even keep up with it anymore.
It's irrelevant because they can't do it. They would have a hard time if one big bank went under. And so the PBGC was, you know, touted as, oh, well, you know, this is the government's guarantee. No, it wasn't. It was very limited. And you may remember, I think it was a case in Houston, maybe not, for some reason that Continental, was it Continental Steel or some company name that had Continental in it? That happened, like, I'm thinking during the early 80s, maybe late 70s. I mean, I remember that event being a real wake-up call when added to the stack on several others that had gone under. And that's when you began to realize that, you know, the whole system was hanging by a thread. I'm not sure the 401 was anything other than the only choice they had, because it was the pension concept was bankrupting companies. And if you don't think that's the case, look right in our own backyard, the city of Houston. I think the plan that they're so upside down on, where they're not even close to being able to cover the benefits, it's, I forget how much it is, but it's what, is it in excess of $1 billion underfunding?
Firemen and police and the city.
Right. And you know, at some point, and that's just not the city of Houston, by the way. Look at Illinois. Well, look at every municipality, right? I mean, almost every one of them. And who do you think's going to pay for that? I mean, it's going to be us. It's going to be the current people. And one of the reasons I'm going into this discussion is, look, we can do some offloading as we sit here today. And I'm going to suggest to you, and Dan, we mentioned earlier, we'd be discussing the rates. What were the rate changes that back in 2009, speak of the good old days, that's back when we only had a deficit probably in what, the 5-6? I'm going to look that up while you're talking, Dan, but talk about that CBO report. 2009 now, and it only gets worse.
The lowest rate from, what was it, 12% to 25%, the mid rate to 53%.
Think 2009. Yeah, think 2009 now. The brackets generally were 10, 25, and 35. So now with that in
now
the focus, talk about what they said.
83 and 88, the highest one they were projecting back 13 years ago.
Yeah.
And the debt
so roughly
was only $6 trillion. Nowadays it's well in excess of $31 trillion, five times in what, less than 10 or 12 years.
Yeah.
National debt $31 trillion and going up.
Well, and that's just the piece that we're willing to book. And as you well know, Dan, we were a company reporting under generally accepted accounting principles,
like they do their pensions when they do have them.
That's right. That's right. What I mean, I see estimates the low end that I think everybody will stipulate to at a minimum is instead of a $30 trillion deficit, it's 130. Some people say up to 230, 250. And what these are, trillion. Lest you think that, you know, this is all just stuff we talk about. No, these are commitments based on legislation that has already passed. And, you know, we are looking at indexes on current programs like Social Security, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, Medicare is in there. All the stuff that we're going to pay for, you see how it's done. You look at the current Build Back Better. Originally, it had a 10-year focus until, you know, enough people in Congress, even the Democrat side, just said, this is insanity. We can't keep doing this. So what do? They dial it back to what, Dan? 1 year, 2 years on funding, knowing that if they just get it in play, there's no way Republican or Democrat will ever be able to back out, right? They won't be the ones to want to be known for changing the rules on how, you know, what your retirement age is or what's the index for inflation, et cetera, and what's covered, moreover. And you see now the big focus is on negotiating prescriptions. Prescription coverage. I'm just curious, why do we need an act of Congress to make that plausible? What shouldn't we be doing that all along? I don't understand how these rules. I mean, I'm just a caveman accountant, said that many times. I would think that in your own life, daily, you're negotiating, right? Okay, Dan, I've got the cumulative. Let's see, this is in billions, so you're going to have to help me do the math here. back in, let's see, Ryan's report was 2009, so here's 2010. 2008, it's right at 10,000 billion. So that must be what?
That's 10 trillion.
Okay, so, well, it was higher than I thought, but still a third what we have now. So even at only $10 trillion, CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, you know, the umpire that calls the balls and strikes on new legislation that's been passed as to what it's going to cost us, even they are saying 150% tax bracket increases based on, now I'm sure I've got that report and it's very technical and it's got a lot of forecast information in it, so I can't remember if they actually forecasted a $30 trillion deficit in 2022. It's probably likely they didn't, or maybe they did. I don't know. I'm not sure you could see that.
They wouldn't have
right?
done
I mean,
that. That'd yeah. be too truthful. That'd be too transparent.
Well, and we didn't know about the pandemic, and of course, you know, we don't worry too much about the 62 million babies that we've had lose their life in the last 50 years from health care, quote unquote. But we spent however much of that, you know, I think there's been about $6 to $8 trillion spent throughout the pandemic on stimulus and other programs, right? Programs in quotes. And, you know, you look at the cost of that, we've lost about 1 million lives, which I understand, you know, trust me, if you're one of the million or your folks are, your family, it's not like it's not important, but I guess I'm trying to look at it in a relative scale, the amount of money that we spent, according to whoever was in office at the time, it's not just limited to Democrats, to save human lives, and yet for some reason we don't seem to apply that logic across the board. How many deaths have we had related to fentanyl or to alcohol or to any one of a number of other ills, auto accidents, alcoholism, right? Look at the significant number of suicides that happen every day just in the military. You know, the folks that have served in the military, these are huge numbers. And yet the pandemic, if you look at it on a by-person, per capita basis, I'm not sure how much it is, but it's a boatload of money that's gone out. And all that money has worked its way into the system. And if you don't think that's in part what's causing inflation, it's not just Mr. Putin. And in fact, I'm not even sure that Mr. Putin's feeling the effects of inflation like we are. But in any event, you know, the effect on our tax rate risk is off the charts. And part of what you can do now is offload We've allowed our pensions to be offloaded. How about we offload some of our future tax bill onto others who may be willing to continue to shoulder the burden? I don't know. But anyway, we'll talk about that more in the final segment, which we're getting ready to go to. We'll take another break here and be back in just a few minutes for more of the Be a Planner Tax Mash Show with Nathan Ross and Dan DuBose.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make demands. Look like a woman, think like a man. Be as good as or better than. Gotta woman up and take it like a man.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner Tax Mash Show with Nathan Ross and Dan DuBose. And Dan, I think one of the most telling variables of that CBO report to Congress back in 2009 was that they didn't predict the, if you look at the report, there's one chart that I can remember, which is the percentage of the public debt, or just call that our cumulative borrowings, is of our annual GDP, because that's a comparative that I've heard more than a few congressmen or government officials say, well, you know, there's no reason to worry because our GDP keeps going up and the percentage of debt to GDP keeps going down. Well, they're singing a different tune today. And the CBO report, Dan, you may recall, didn't project that we would be at 100% of our GDP. And I can't recall. What is the GDP at these days? Do you recall the number by chance?
Sorry, I don't, Nathan. But I just, it's in the debt is running up to our total production.
Okay.
Production.
Well, I've got it here. I just checked Google, and of course that means I Google know it. Doesn't mean I know it, but at least I Google know it. 2021 was $23 trillion. That sounds a little bit low, so I don't know. Maybe 2022 will be higher. But if that's the case, it actually bears out one of the other stats that I've got in my head, which is that according to some economists, as of the end of 2021, we were 137% of GDP. So that actually would put us right there, I guess, very, very close, maybe even more. Now, others say, I know David McKnight, the Power of Zero author, who we're associated with in his mentor program, I know he says It's like 108. It doesn't matter. The point is, we're well past the point that the CBO was looking at back when they did the report. They said we would hit the 100% mark in approximately 2040. So we're way ahead of schedule, and unfortunately, that's not a party you want to be early to, right? So in any event, it's worse than what it would be when they said, well, we need to raise taxes 150%, meaning, as Dan said, I believe 10 goes to 25%. The 25% goes to 63%. Think about that. 63%. Not in our lifetime has the middle class even been close. And then the last bracket, which, you know, only the wealthiest people paid back early in my life, when I was probably 4, 5, 6 years old, will go from the current, well, will go from the then highest bracket, 35%, that was in 2008, up to 88%, not counting state income tax. So, you know, obviously in Texas, we don't have an individual tax. We've got plenty of other taxes. If you're thinking we've escaped somehow, just go look at the per capita spending of any state if you want to determine is it a high tax state, because you can't spend if you're not raising taxes. In any event, so all this said, we've painted the picture of, you know, gloomy retirement projections, the cost of your living in retirement is skyrocketing right before our eyes. Medical care is one of those costs where the average American, well, 50% of American couples will spend somewhere on the order of $800,000 on health care in retirement. Now, that assumes one of you or both, depending on how long, are affected by a long-term health care issue or chronic illness. And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, you look at it from a financial standpoint, most people don't become afflicted with long-term health care issues until they're close to the point that they'll pass. But there are obviously more than a few that may be in long-term health care facilities for 10, 15 years. But in any event, so what do we do, Dan? What are the choices for those of us that have some retirement funds? And I'm not just talking about the tax implication, but how do we catch up for those that are behind on their retirement? What would we offer in terms of some advice or some recommendations as to how to catch up?
Real estate is a great one to put your money into for the over history has shown that it has outpaced everything that's investment-wise over the many, many years, and it's going to continue to be because no more land being made. We can build a bunch of houses. We can build some apartments, but no more land.
Yeah. And not only that, the cash flows that are associated with the type of real estate we like and our clients like, which is multifamily, and when you combine it with a 401 trust, you keep all the tax dollars in the investment so that you're not leaking 25 to 30% out each time you exit a transaction. Like you do, with, by the way, the self-directed IRA pays that. We've talked about that many times. The self-directed IRA will pay. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dan.
You talk about the UBIT.
Well, the UBIT, generally, the subcomponent is UDFI, which is the unrelated debt financed income. Call it the leverage tax, where if you're in a transaction that uses leverage, which every real estate transaction that makes money does, you're going to pay, your IRA is going to pay, you know, anywhere from, usually it's in the 20 to 30% range on the gains, the taxable gains at exit. And most people look at me like deer in a headlights look when I say your IRA is taxable. And then they might faint when I mention, oh, yeah, that applies to Roth IRAs as well. So it's not just a pre-tax or traditional IRA. Even a Roth, if it's invested in leveraged real estate, will pay the UDFI tax. So it's punitive. The 401 in the, I believe it was in the mid to late 80s, Congress was lobbied. Of course, if I haven't already explained how we offloaded the the pension from the company over to the individual, you got to assume their lobby is incredibly strong. The Fidelity, Schwab's, et cetera, of the world. Well, they prevailed upon Congress to exempt the 401 plan from the unrelated debt financed income, the leverage tax. And that applies even to the single employee model, which came about in 2002, I believe was the year that it came available. And so you've got the perfect loophole. It's big enough to drive a Mack truck through, as I've said before, to where you can avoid your retirement funds getting decimated by taxes along the way. And then you've got time to either do a Roth conversion, or you're going to take out amounts that won't be the entire pie. It'll be a sliver here and there to live on, and you'll pay, obviously, rate or tax rates in the lower brackets, whatever those are. But how about if you convert to Roth today, where we have historically the lowest tax brackets in our history? The rates are on sale, Mr. DeBose, at least, 30 to 50% over the rest of our lifetime. And so if we convert, when our money is invested in a private company transaction, like these multifamily syndications, we are allowed discounts of up to, let's call it 50 to 70% on the value to calculate the Roth conversion tax on. That's insane that that is allowed under the tax code. And naming one other business where the confluence of factors of higher than average returns married up with the ability to cut the cost of a Roth conversion by a 50 to 70% factor exists. I can't think of any. Can you think of any other industries or asset spaces, Dan, that might apply to?
No, you know, the other thing that you might talk about or mention is the fact that the stock market is down somewhat now. That might be a good time to make well, that Roth conversion to save on the tax side.
That's right. Even if you don't buy into the self-directed model because you don't fully understand or agree with the discussion, even if your money's in Apple stock or AT&T or whatever, index funds might be harder to do it with, but you can still do a Roth conversion. The question is, how are you going to get it done at 50 to 75% discounts? That means on $1 million, you pay tax on $300,000 to $500,000, which is a lot lower than paying it on the million. And if your money's sitting in a brokerage account, it's worth more. You don't have a lack of marketability discount. You don't have assorted other discounts associated with whether you can rent your apartment units, refinance your apartment units, sell your apartment units. Those are all risks that we have, which we willingly accept. And by the way, you've got the same risk when you buy your personal residence. You just don't think about it. And all the disclosures are there in fine print. We just don't fixate on them. But it's very similar risk. And yet, you usually, at least living in Houston, we don't see our funds, our gains, double every 3.5 to 5 years, which is what we hope to get on our real estate. It's a big difference. Dan, we've got about 30 seconds left here, not 30 minutes. You got anything to add to that Roth conversion and why we want to do it now?
Save taxes.
How fast is that train coming?
Your family even could be saving taxes with that Roth IRA. Your kids.
Well, that's true. That's exactly right. When you pass those dollars on,
or the Roth.
Anyway, yeah, we're going to keep talking about Roth every week. So, you know, stay tuned in. Send me your questions. Text them to me 713-581-0195, and join us tomorrow morning 7 a.m. bright and early Central Time for the Be a Planner Syndication Math Show, and we've got several topics we'll talk about, including a little bit more discussion on some of the current transactions that are out there that we kind of opened the door on last week. We hope you can join us. Otherwise, we'll see you, quote unquote, next Saturday, 5 p.m. here on the Tax Man Show. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEB.